And now it's time for wait a minute. What the hell is the show called again?
It's Chatter on Books. What else do you want me to say? Can I go now?
That's right. It's Chatter on Books. Let's do this thing.
Okay, we're going. We're back. Welcome to Chatter on Books. It's our 33rd episode. I am now going to obsessively keep track of the numbers. We're coming to you from a lovely undisclosed location where the bartender has recently arrived, so he should be back soon. And we've got Jeannie and Michael Kornheiser and David Aldridge, and Marcellus is running the board and doing all this other stuff with those cool lights on his board. I have no idea what that all means, but it looks really, really cool.
The key master.
There's more than one button.
The gatekeeper
there
or the
are.
Key master. One of those two.
And I was hearing there are lots of cool things he can do with, you know,
it
Skype
looks like
and
Simon
other stuff.
Says.
It does, doesn't it?
That's
remember
a
that?
Good
yeah.
Call.
Yeah.
There's a person.
Can you play video games on that? Okay, that's
location,
Ron Charles.
So I might be wrong.
Okay, Michael, A, how's Baby Dumb, and B, can you please let Ron Charles in?
Happy to handle that.
Thank you. Good. Okay. So we got a lot of things on tap for this evening. I've got some random thoughts I have to bounce off people. We have a lovely email. We have an update on... Hi, Ron Charles. Welcome. Come on in. I have a special request from the Littles for the Summer of Littles 2. Got a public service announcement for them that
this
I have
is
to
August
do.
August 3rd, correct?
August 3rd. I'm really feeling badly because I don't think I can go, but I'm going to try.
Sure, I'm going to be.
The local one is at War DACA.
Where
is it? In Gaithersburg.
Gaithersburg.
Just past Gary Land.
Okay.
Vienna, nice Virginia, I need a passport. Gaithersburg, I might make it if I'm here.
Gaithersburg, wow.
Yeah. We're going to have a pop quiz on book reviews. Our guest could maybe pitch in on the pop, quiz, get nervous.
We won't grade you, we promise.
And our guest who just arrived is Ron Charles, who is a book critic for the Washington Post and the star of these amazing, wonderful, highly entertaining.
And
thank
so
you.
Well orchestrated.
Thank
great
you.
Great production values. The totally hip video book reviews.
I appreciate
they're
that.
Fabulous. They're fabulous. We're going to make you talk about a lot of those.
Okay.
And how
that
much
I
you
can
pay
do.
Your wife to participate in some of them.
Yeah. She's a good sport.
She
let's
is.
Just say
that. Was not in the wedding vows, is all I know. And Deserted Islands, what books are in your guest bedroom, which sounds a lot racier than it actually is, because most of us don't have guest bedrooms.
Correct.
Okay, but first we got to do wine and cheese. Spent a lovely 45 minutes with Michael Sands at Calvert Woodley today. At 4339 Connecticut Avenue. And for those who are listening, they've got everything straightened out. If you say Chatter 5 at checkout, you get $5 off your bill at Calvert Woodley. So you should go.
You just put up a hand, like 5. And
then
give me 5.
Yeah, C5 would work. So our wine this evening is a 2018 Andriano Pinot Grigio. Ron, wine, water, beer?
I'm fine.
Okay. Go make yourself at home.
Thank
you. We asked you once, and then after that, you're on your own. Okay. And I'm going to ask Jeannie what she thinks of the wine so far. It's a Pinot Grigio.
It's lovely.
Summery. I asked for something that could hold up with the heat.
Definitely summery. It's not too fruity. Mm-hmm. David, you're drinking it right now.
It's lovely.
It's a sip and wine.
It is a sip and wine. It's a pre-dinner wine for sure.
Laughing? I'm laughing because Michael went out and hit my kid's stash to get the Bud Light. How's the Bud Light, Michael?
It's great, thank you. It's exactly what I was looking for.
Right,
I've had a couple long days.
The kids are
I think if I had anything stronger, I'd fall asleep at the
dinner. The kids are going to go out there and go, Who's been into the Bud Light?
Yeah.
How old are these children?
Barely old enough.
Drinking age.
Barely old enough.
Don't you worry about it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Their IDs look very, very legit. You post these. Did you know Ben Giliberti?
I know Ben very well. He was one of the wine critics of the food section.
Yes,
of the
he was.
When
and
I was
one,
food editor.
One of the reasons Michael Sands gave us this wine. Ben wrote a review of this particular wine. Again, 2018 Andriano Pinot Grigio Alto Adige, I think it's called. He called it an electrifying Italian white. And he wrote such a gushing review of it that Michael Sands actually talked to him and said, what's up? Loves it. Yeah, it's really good.
Because I trust Ben 100%.
Yeah. Are you sensing aromas and flavors of peach and tropical fruit?
Sort of, kind of.
Whatever Ben says, I'm good with.
It's made from 100% Pinot Grigio grapes. As with all noble wines, Ben says, the vineyard tells the story. Located in the famous, how do you say this word? D-O-L-O-M-I-T-E.
Dolomite,
is it?
Mm-hmm. I think.
You don't
have
a Dolomite D? It's not?
Dolomite. Okay. It's just Dolomite.
Dolomite Mountains in the foothills of the Alps.
There's a long story involving someone named Dolomite, but I'm not going to get into it.
Okay, we got time. It's a podcast.
No, you don't.
Okay. But it's really lovely.
And then Michael challenges Ibrahim to come up with this. And I say this all the time, but it's really true. If you've got half an hour, go to Calvert Woodley and you tell them what you're serving or what you feel like having for dinner that evening. And they'll pick an exceptional wine. And then they show that to Ibrahim at La Cheeserie. And he picks an incredible cheese. And I found out, among other things today, because he gave us the Pecorino Toscanini DOP, which is made from sheep's milk. And it turns out Ibrahim, whom you get to know if you've been there enough times, loves all things sheep. Oh. Sheep's cheese, sheep meat, sheep, you name it. That's his thing, yeah. But it's lovely. Okay, Michael, have you had some of the cheese?
I have not had that cheese.
Yeah.
Okay, you can go for that.
Cheese in a second.
Okay, so some random...
crushing. You have these Parmesan crisps.
Ooh, pretty good.
Everything sounds good. I haven't had
Butcher's Alley. Yeah, I have to say, I have to throw that out because they're lovely. Brian, the bartender at the undisclosed location, that's my husband, Charles, Ron, didn't have time to make anything today, so I had to throw some stuff together. But it's a pretty
you
nice little
very well.
Table,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
it?
Very
yeah,
good. I
okay.
can't wait.
Great presentation.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
A lot of lettuce.
Good visuals.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so we got a nice email from Jay Clement. I'm going to use his name. Okay. And he says, Jeannie's going to like this one, on memoirs. Remember we did memoirs? Was that just last week? I admit to love a music memoir. The Keith Richards book is indeed fabulous.
It is.
Ron, did you read that?
I have not.
Okay. All right, you can stay.
Is the first sentence, I can't believe I'm alive either?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
He highly recommends, Jay highly recommends the very literate Elvis Costello memoir, Unfaithful Music and Disappearing Ink. I think that sounds okay. Costello would be good. Move through many different circles. Cleverly
whose
written.
Real name is McManus.
Is that right?
Wow.
Absolutely.
Are you related?
Yeah.
Could be.
He's my. Yeah. You know, he's my son.
That'd be a good title. Elvis Costello. He's my son.
He doesn't know it.
Jay also likes Steve Martin's memoir, Born Standing Up.
It was very good.
That was lovely.
It was very good.
That's a good
very good.
Jay goes on to say, thanks for the show. I've read many books that otherwise would have passed unnoticed. That's kind of what they say about this show. Otherwise would have passed unnoticed. On Tyranny was so profound that I've purchased copies for many friends and family. For instance, thanks, Jeannie.
Yes.
Good job. Why do we love On Tyranny? I can't remember.
Because it's about preserving democracy and what we've all fought for in this country and justice. And it is a small,
timely
book that you could put in your back pocket. And while you're sitting at the subway stop, take it out and read it and be inspired by it.
I love this.
Another great recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay. Birthdays today.
Okay.
Oh, the first one, you guys won't know who this is. Ron Turcotte.
Ron's a jockey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bless your little heart. Famous for riding. Yes, he did. Do you know what the family business was and he tried before he tried racing horses?
It was like a trapper or something?
Close. Lumberjack.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
5'1". It doesn't work well.
Okay. Yeah, and he got paralyzed. He's been paralyzed for about 30 years now.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful guy who I actually met once. He's 77. Alex Trebek. 78 years old.
God bless him. Still with us. Thank God.
With stage 4 pancreatic cancer, right?
But you know what? I've started watching Jeopardy since that one guy was
James,
on. That strange guy that, you know, whatever.
They're all strange people on Jeopardy.
Yeah, they are all strange, but he was stranger than most. Alex Trebek is the most wooden of.
The man's almost dead.
I guess. But I think even before
that. And he's Canadian.
Have some respect.
But I think, Ron, that even before that, he was wooden. Oh. Because, I have to say, I never watched until, the multi-million-dollar guy was on, and then I began to watch.
You only play the lottery if it's over $500 million.
Yeah, like $5 billion, I'm in.
Yeah.
See, when I think of Trebek, I just think of the SNL sketch, so it's hard for me to separate the caricature from
SNL.
The actual person.
SCTV.
That is a great
parodies
one.
Of him.
Yeah. So, you know, many years ago, many, many years ago, John McCain, for whom I used to work, was once on Jeopardy when he was a young stud in his Navy whites, and before him, John Glenn had been on Jeopardy,
and he was also on. Major Bowes, perhaps Amateur Hour. Or
I don't know,
Art
but they were.
Don't
on,
tell me they were on Dancing with the Stars.
No. This was when he was before the astronaut days.
Both been on Jeopardy in the Art Fleming days, and so there was some big anniversary of Jeopardy coming up. Maybe it's the 30th anniversary, and I'm working with John McCain. I have this brilliant idea. We're going to get John McCain and John Glenn to compete on the 30th anniversary of Jeopardy. So I'm on the phone with the Jeopardy people. They think this is great. This is wonderful. We are building this whole show. We're finding uniforms the two old guys could stuff their bodies into. And then the Keating 5 scandal happened. And the Jeopardy people called me up and said, yeah, that's not really going to work. So we didn't get to do that. Okay, and we cannot let the day go by without voting on the great international debate. Tom Brady, should he or should he not have jumped off the rocks with his 5-year-old daughter? 8-year-old daughter.
Parenting.
Come on. Have you seen the video?
I'm in favor of risk taking with your children.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, David.
I don't think my wife would.
Would she have killed you if you had done that?
Yes.
The kid wanted to do it.
Of course, the kid wants. The kids want to do everything. They want to stick their tongues in a fan. They were doing that too.
I stuck my finger in a fan. That was different. Okay.
So I would not be married anymore if I did that.
Okay,
either of the children.
But four against Tom Brady on this one.
I mean, I understand why he's doing it. It's about, you know, enjoying life and never being scared and facing fears and all that sort of thing, which has value.
Don't dislocating your child's arm.
That is the reality of what happens to children because they don't know what they're doing and they have no coordination, so they usually wind up headfirst into whatever it is they're doing.
Yeah.
So that's the risk you take of jumping off of things with them.
Yeah.
So I probably
Michael,
would not have done it.
This is
relatively
new
dad.
For me just because my understanding of parenting is with two young kids now, and so today, Walker starts to climb up the back end of a slide, which is the biggest thing he's climbed yet with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm protecting him. I am spotting him. So I'm okay with this. This makes me think of a book that you wouldn't remember. It's a picture book. I recommended a few months back called Jabari Jumps.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a dad takes his two kids to the pool. Jabari wants to go off the high dive.
Oh, yeah.
And his dad starts to say, it's a surprise. And he goes up there, curls his toes around the high board and goes, I love surprises. And he jumps and he comes out tomorrow saying, tomorrow, double backflip. So I love facing that. It's hard for me because I don't actually know how to swim. I can survive in the water, but I don't think my wife would allow me to do something like this just because I can't swim in rough water. Mm-hmm. I can't really swim if it's above my head very well. Again, I can survive myself. I can doggy paddle. And I'm also terrified of heights. So
bummer on two fronts.
I'll be interested to see how my attitude towards this changes because I'm seeing these moments every day where Walker's climbing. And I do want him to be able to say, I face.
And you don't want to project your fears on him.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Ron, would you have dragged your kid off a cliff?
Definitely not. No.
I would have in a heartbeat. I'm all for Tom Brady in this one. Absolutely. Yeah. She wanted to do it. And yes, she was scared because that's what little kids do. They want to do things and they go, oh my God, this is terrifying. So yeah.
She'll remember it the rest of her life.
But I'm sick and tired of people shaming everybody else online.
Yeah.
Shaming them for everything.
When our oldest was 4 or 5, I remember going to like an amusement park and it was fairly high. You know, you climb up and you go through the different stages and winds up being, about 20, 30 feet high in the air.
Pretty high.
And he was up there and he was like scared. And I said, no, you got to figure out a way to come down. But that was controlled. This is not.
Yeah. I just thought he
gravity.
I thought he should have had, I get into the execution of these things. I thought the concept was great, but he should have had a better grip on her because the way he was holding her, because I've watched the video 15 times, If he hadn't had that last little grasp on her, she probably would have hit the rocks. Oh. We'd be having a different conversation.
Yeah.
But that was one of the biggest stories online.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you guys ready for the pop quiz?
Yeah.
I've changed this.
I always flunk this.
Yeah. Well, you're all going to flunk. Well, maybe you won't. Uh-huh. We'll see how good Ron Charles
is.
Okay. Wait. I want to make sure you guys can't see this.
Okay.
Are you cheating?
No.
Okay.
I can read upside down and backwards.
I'm going to read you a review, and then you guys have to guess, and you can buzz in. And Ron, you can buzz in if you want. Marcellus, you can buzz in if you want. I'm going to read you part of a review, and then you have to guess what the book is. Because what I tried to do was, I steal everything. I wanted to steal an idea from Wait, Don't Tell Me. And you had to guess which was the real review.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the reviews are so bad, that you can't top them.
No.
And I can't write, so it was a challenge. It got really annoying. I was trying to escape from the family reunion, and I couldn't. Okay.
And you see them after they run. You should see what they're like when they come in.
Oh, bad.
Unbelievable.
Oh, bad.
Okay, first one up. We rise from the perusal of name of book as if we had come from a pest house. Read Jane Eyre is our advice, but burn this book. I'll give you a hint. This is 1848.
Oh.
Mm. Ron's
read
like, oh,
Jane
geez.
Eyre.
Uh-huh. But burn this one.
Pride and Prejudice?
No. Anybody? Got to keep moving. I don't have all night.
It's not the Kim Kardashian story.
No. No. Wuthering Heights.
I was just going to say Wuthering Heights.
And it was from Patterson's Magazine in 1848.
Watch out for Bertha.
I was just going to say that.
You were just going to say Patterson's, 1848?
No, I didn't know that, but I did read an appreciation of Wuthering Heights of last year in the Post.
Okay, these get better and a little bit more current. Okay, right. This new novel is probably the closest name of author we'll ever get to his version of The Hangover.
Brett Easton Ellis? Brett Easton Ellis, sorry.
Okay, then another one. On the same book, his novels are like high-stakes 500-page Mad Libs. Michael, a reader doesn't have to worry that it will be a fun ride, just that the adverbs and proper nouns will line up in a way that honors the art form. Narration appears lifted from a photo's guide, as when blank, the main character, pauses in the middle of a life or death escape to remember the history of a bridge.
Dan Brown.
Yes. Very good. That's good. Very good.
That was a miserable book.
Yeah.
Which one was that, Jean?
Inferno.
Yeah.
Mm. Another one on that, though. At least it is entertaining twaddle. Let's just hope the new Pope won't make the mistake of his predecessors and boost Dan Brown's sales even further by issuing a denunciation.
Right.
That's what you'd really want for your book, is to be denounced by the Pope.
Yeah.
We should get this podcast announced by the Pope. That would be great.
Condemned by the Pope.
Yeah,
condemned
by the
Pope.
I'll see what I can do.
We can get there pretty quickly.
Yes.
Another glass of Michael Sands wine, we can get there. Okay, I'm tempted, but I'm going to go with the classier one here. And Michael, you should get this. Quote, and because this is a different book, and because he is so good at characterizing people according to their possessions and styles, everything about them gets reduced to appearances.
Oh,
1979.
Jay McInerney?
No.
Tom Wolfe.
Yes.
Boom.
Yes.
Good one.
Cool, David. David's winning.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Which one was that?
Right Stuff.
Right Stuff.
Kirkus Review said, until Tom Wolfe can put his subject first and his preening writing persona second. Mm. Meow.
I like Tom
He
Wolf's
probably won't be. I do too. He probably won't be a convincing chronicler of anything much weightier than Radical Chic.
Okay. But
yeah, you know, I don't think we remember this person from Kirkus Reviews.
It's telling that you mentioned the
but
right stuff.
But I'm interested, and that's why I asked Michael if he would want to read that, because I'm interested in
working my way through it.
Somebody,
are we on page 8 yet of
your
book yet,
age would think about Tom Wolfe's writing style today, because at the time, I think when I read it, I was like so absorbed by its innovation, sometimes innovation doesn't
hold up.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember.
What do you think?
Michael's doing a book report for us on Right Stuff, by the way.
Well, related. Last week, I read Mailer's book on the moonshot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I thought it was just gonzo, weird and crazy and bizarre.
Uh-huh.
You know, he takes on this persona of Aquarius. Like, why? What are you doing? And then talks about himself in the third person. It is absolutely bizarre.
And at the time, we sort of supported, some of us sort of supported
Right. It must have seemed exciting.
Yeah.
It was the 3 episodes of Life magazine, the longest piece they've ever published.
Is that
right? Wow.
I wonder what we would think of In Cold Blood.
Oh, I read it last year. You would love it.
I mean, I've reread it and I liked it, but I mean, at the time.
I read that when I was 15 and it scared the crap out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder what you read it recently and it still holds up?
For me, totally.
Yeah.
Anything with murder and mayhem. That just works great for me. Michael, how are we doing on the book report, honey?
I'm through the first chapter.
Yeah. Are you hating it? Are you deeply resenting that?
No. But again, to me, it sounds like, as I said last week, it sounds like discursive, meandering New Yorker.
But that's what I thought.
Writing.
That's what that review sounded just like. What you had said about it.
It is sort of. But I am. I remember this. Like, I think I read that when I was. It must have been when I was in college, I guess. And the whole idea when he describes what a pilot sounds like.
Yes.
The twang of the and it comes from West Virginia, sort of, and he's walking you through all. Well, it's not that bad. Well, we got to go around this thunderstorm here, and you're and he's right. That's what every pilot sounds like.
And I also thought what really comes through is what true bravery is.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the monkeys going up in the capsule.
It was Jaeger.
Jaeger.
And that comes through.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Why don't you keep talking? I'm just going to take notes over here on the side, and I'll be back next week.
Again, I had your report time to go with the 50th anniversary, but anyway.
And I dropped the launch. I'm sorry.
Well, you did have a baby.
Yeah, you did. You had a good excuse. You had a different kind of launch.
I did not love the other Tom Wolfe books, but I really liked that one. I read A Man in Full, and it was kind of like ponderous and tedious.
Yeah, I didn't like A Man in Full.
Yeah.
But okay, I'm going to do one more just because it's so much fun. And I don't know if I believe this one, but you know, I pulled it off the interweb, so it must be true. Okay, different book. Quote, I've never read anything so badly written that got published. It made Twilight, remember the Twilight series?
Yeah.
All right.
Look like War and Peace.
It's an E.L. James novel?
Yes. Ooh. Who wrote the review?
Who wrote the review? Was it Yardley?
Salman Rushdie.
Oh.
Why would he review 50 Shades of Grey?
Just as a stunt for The Guardian, maybe?
Probably got paid. He got paid. Okay.
Not much, by the way.
Oh, okay.
That's one of the questions we have for you.
I'm going to turn down that contract offer.
So we have with us Ron Charles, book critic for The Washington Post, and I say that carefully, book critic for The Washington Post. That's correct
so far, right? Yes.
Uh-huh. And star and producer and director of the Totally Hip video book reviews.
Also true.
Which are remarkable. But
possibly true.
Let's kind of start at the beginning. St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes.
Which is lovely. Principia College.
Yeah, that's where I met my wife.
Tell us about that.
Still married.
We have so many questions about you. The fact that you're still married to her after these videos is remarkable. I want my husband to come down here and I can say, see, it can be worse. It can be worse. Principia College, interesting place, interesting history, interesting alums.
Yes.
You're listed as one of the most famous alums. Do you know the other two?
probably some of the Watergate plumbers.
No, Candy Crowley.
Oh,
who was wonderful for CNN for many, many years. Yes. And Robert Duvall.
Yeah. Yeah, we all claim to have roomed with him, but, you know.
You didn't.
No, I did not.
He's sort of like Tommy Lee Jones at Harvard. Everybody
exactly.
roomed with
him. Everybody roomed with
him. Have I ever told we'll come back to you in a minute. My Robert Duvall story at the Pentagon?
No.
Okay, I'll say this carefully because he's still alive.
He lives nearby.
Worked at the Pentagon. Rumsfeld's briefings were pretty famous and people and just highly entertaining in theater and drama. When somebody comes to my office one day and says, Robert Duvall wants to come to one of the press briefings. Sure, whatever.
Is he going
to
wear that hat?
I don't think he had a hat on. Okay. And he shows up and he and his wife, who was not the same age, to put it carefully.
They lived out in Virginia.
Much, much younger. Yeah, still do. And he had two wives out in Virginia, one of whom I think ran away with a tango instructor. They had big tango parties at their farm, at their barn.
Yeah.
And she ran away with a tango instructor. So then there was a new wife. I'm pretty sure.
As you do.
Again, I got this off the interweb, so don't blame me. But Robert Duvall and his beautiful wife, and they're very nice. They stopped in my office and they go into the brief room and they sit in the back very respectfully. And one of the rules with Rumsfeld, with all of us, whenever we did briefings, is if you had a question or if you didn't know the answer to something, or if you were sitting there trying to pay attention to your boss, pretending to care what he was talking about, and you heard him say something wrong, you'd have to hand him a piece of paper and tell him, you got that wrong, fix it. So there's always a lot of interaction between the person at the podium, people sitting there. So he's up there, Rumsfeld's up there, and he looks over at me and gestures me up while General so-and-so was answering some questions. So I jog on up because I'm a very important person and these are very important matters of state. And he kind of points to the back of the room and he goes, who is that with Robert Duvall? And I have to write on a piece of paper, I believe that's his wife. Wow. Got a big wow. Anyways, Robert Duvall fell asleep during the briefing. Fell asleep. Okay. So, but tell us about...
He might have been praying.
He might have been. Tell us about Principia College and what did you learn there that led you on this path to be...
Gosh, well, I thought I'd be an English professor. So I went from there to Washington University in St. Louis, then started teaching, and then got so sick of grading papers, I thought I was going to die. And a student's mother said, why don't you review books? So I went into a bookstore in St. Louis, grabbed a book off the new bookshelf, wrote up a review, and
do you remember the first one?
Yeah, it was Straight Man by Richard Russo.
What'd you say about it?
I thought it was very, very funny. Still one of my favorite academic novels.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And they actually paid you for it?
They paid me $150 at the Christian Science Monitor in Boston. And I kept freelancing for them for a few years. And then they hired me as their book editor. And we lived in Boston for 7 years. And then
where'd you live?
In Milton. Mm-hmm. Near Milton Academy. It was very nice. And we came down here to the Post. And I took Michael Dirda's place as an editor. Mm-hmm. Although he has continued to write for us every week, fortunately. And I've been there almost 15 years.
Wow. So talk a little bit about the process, because I got to believe you're inundated.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
12-year-old at the publishers inundating you with, you must read this book by the latest dark Swedish author.
Yes, every book is a winner.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Every publicist is a bald-faced liar.
How do you, let's start with how you decide what you will review and then how you review them. How do you decide what to review?
And who to review it?
The covers, mostly.
Yeah, it's like me and wine.
A sexy cover.
If there's an animal on the bottle of wine, I'm all
off it goes. Yeah. We get about 150 books a day.
No. Oh, wow. No, yeah. No.
Yeah.
That's, they send the books in?
Yeah, they pour in. There's a woman that's her whole job pretty much, is to get those books out of the mailroom and open them and sort them and
I remember who she was when I was there. She was always looked overburdened then.
Yes,
and
it's now, always
and
such
now
a person.
It's even worse. Yeah,
it's a young woman we just got from a PBS NewsHour. Delightful. But it's overwhelming. And if you take a day off, you know, then you've got
300.
Right.
Yeah. So how do you decide?
Big authors we know are going to review. We always review. The new Richard Russo novel came in. There was no doubt it was going to be assigned. So that's pretty obvious. All those authors you think of, the Barbara Kingsolver novel has to be assigned. All those names you recognize have to be assigned. Then you get to the new book that's being hyped by everybody 3 months out. And how do you decide? You know, and you just have to make an educated guess. We don't have any pre-readers. We don't send the books out, have them read, and then decide. So it is just a guess. Is this book going to be big? Is it going to be talked about? Does it meet, does it fill some hole in our efforts to cover lots of different subjects and lots of different kinds of authors? So you just,
how has that process changed over the last, say, 10, 15 years? If it has, do you look for more diversity
in
the authors?
Oh, we're so much better now. We made a concerted effort 7 or 8 years ago after Vita started to release those reports on how many women were or were not being reviewed.
Right.
We made a very concerted effort to review more women, and we're largely successful in...
And by women reviewers sometimes.
Yes,
too.
Dramatically increasing the number of women who are writing for us. In fact, I hired women to write for us every month, so it would be built into our schedule. Because for a couple of years, we just tried to make an effort, but then nothing really happened. You just fall back onto your old patterns. Mm-hmm. So we really had to kind of build it in for a while.
How has technology changed?
Well, I got there after email, but I was there with people who remember the old days when the reviews were mailed in, and then the secretary had to type them up. Mm-hmm. And then you would call on
the
phone.
Tell our listeners what typing is.
QWERTY.
Or fax.
Right.
And then you would call the reviewer on the phone and go over your revisions with him or her. It was just an incredibly painful process, I understand.
Okay, but you're way up at this level.
I don't assign anymore or edit anymore.
But you choose for yourself.
Yes, I do choose for myself.
How do you choose? Are there genres you love, genres you hate?
There are no genres that I hate, I don't think. There are genres in which I have no expertise.
Young adult.
I would say young adult. Yeah. I don't. Mm-hmm. Because I know there are people out there who know more and are more invested in, and I don't want to just spout off. So how do I choose? I take most of the big authors for myself until I've done them too much and I have nothing left to say. Or certain subjects I like. I like academic satires a lot. I like Westerns.
Westerns who?
Yeah. There are a bunch of women who write good Westerns. If you look at my on Goodreads, I've got a whole category of... Ooh. Westerns. Uh-huh. And I was surprised. Women have pretty much taken it over.
The Sun by Philip Meyer.
I was on the Pulitzer Committee that year, and we chose that as one of our three.
God, I love that.
That's an incredible book.
What is it like being on the Pulitzer Committee? Do you get paid or do you get good snacks?
I think they gave us $1,000, so it was a few pennies per hour.
But that's a lot of reading.
It was about 450 books. It totally changes your life.
Over what period of time?
About 7 or 8 months.
Wow.
But you
were a barrel of fun at home.
And you don't have to finish the book, because the minute you realize it's not the best book of the year, you stop reading. Stop.
Well, that's a question.
Page 2?
I've always wondered. Like
page 1 sometimes.
The older I get, the less patient I am with what appears to be a mediocre book.
Yeah. Books rarely get better. Okay. It happens.
Okay. So
it
I'm
happens.
Feeling justified a little bit.
Yeah. Cormac McCarthy's great novel, not The Road, but the one before that, All the Pretty Horses?
No Country for Old Men?
All the Pretty Horses.
All the Pretty Horses.
Yeah, that starts horribly. It's 40 dead pages, and then it becomes one of the greatest novels ever.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering about that. We've talked about authors.
We did. And when is it okay to ditch a book?
And you just go, wow, this is not good.
Yeah.
This is really ponderous.
Usually it does not get any better. Yeah.
What's the worst classic out there?
That's not fair.
We've had debates on the show about what a classic is, but you have to say Moby Dick because if you don't,
no, I've been writing about Moby Dick and thinking how great it is. It is long. It is too long.
800. My friends here know this. It is 850 pages of tying knots.
No, that's not true.
Two pages. It is totally.
That is not true. There are lots of.
Bring it out. I got a copy.
There are lots of exciting chapters.
Yeah, that's maybe a half a page. Real fat is half a page. The waves, maybe half a page. 850 pages of tying knots.
I think Friday is his 200th birthday.
Is that right?
Yeah, almost positive. Maybe next Friday. But anyhow, it's this month.
No one should be celebrating. Nobody.
So, Ron, I have a question. It stems from something that actually happened in Book World when I was editor at The Post. Bill McPherson, who was a friend of mine, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning book critic, book critic, and was editor of the book section, became a novelist and wrote a novel, Testing the Current. And the then editor of Book World, Brigitte Weeks, sent it out to a reviewer who was on paper the perfect match, Robertson Davies.
I know how this is going.
And this was... book was reviewed beautifully by everybody else, and Robertson Davies wrote a scathing review. And with great courage, Brigitte published it with, you know, telling Bill exactly what had happened. But you must, and you don't necessarily have to provide the specifics, but you must have been in situations comparable to that where... Yes.
And so, it always ends that way.
It does, doesn't
80%
it?
Of the time the review comes back negative.
And you have to go forward, right?
And our colleagues understand, but they don't really understand. And they always treat you a little differently, at least for a few years.
How could you have?
I know. Why did you make that decision? But all I can say is that we sweat over those decisions.
I'm sure you do.
We try and pick someone who's going to be fair. Frankly, we try and pick someone who's going to understand the book and be enthusiastic about it. But the reviews often come back.
Like a Bob Woodward book or a David Marinus book. One of those books must be very, very...
It is very hard. And the famous people like that, the other challenge is finding someone who doesn't already know them, who hasn't already played golf with them, who isn't, you know, on another committee assigning grant money to them or assigning their kids.
It's like the pharmaceutical business.
It is very tight. Not quite that corrupt, though, or deadly.
But that's something that must be hard to
juggle. The conflicts. Someone like Meg Wolitzer, a friend of mine, I've talked about this before publicly. She knows everybody and everybody loves her. And it's impossible to assign her books because you can't find anyone who isn't a friend.
Her.
Good for
she's worked
her.
It. Yeah. What's the biggest objection you've had to a review you've written?
Oh.
Whether it's just from regular readers or the author?
Actually, I'm in that now. The daughter of a novelist has been writing me increasingly irate, I would say even unhinged, notes about a review I wrote.
Oh, dear.
Just extremely.
Family members.
God, she's got to stop.
Extremely upset.
Yeah, best for me. Alice Roosevelt.
And it's hard. I mean, of course, you don't want your parents' book to be critiqued negatively. I don't blame her, but there's nothing I can do.
Wow. Right. I would like to think that any one of my children would ever defend me in that way. I don't think they would.
They should not.
They would not go to the trouble.
And I think with any critic, it's hard to detach yourself from all of the implications of this, their publisher, their agent, their children, their wife, whatever, and just be pure in your criticism.
I am very modest about it. I mean, I read the book very carefully once, and then I say as completely and honestly as I can what I thought about it in a way that will help other people decide if they'd like to read it. But I know I'm just a leech on the body of the publishing world. I mean, I'm nothing compared to these people who slave over these books for years to produce them. And so I think of myself as very minor in relation to the author of a book.
They don't think so.
Not in that moment, because they think everyone's reading this review. Word. And if they saw my web stats, they would know. No one's reading me.
Is that why you branched out to videos?
No, kind of.
I want to know about these.
This is a while ago now. You know, it was almost 10 years ago. I can't believe it.
They're remarkable.
Thank you very much.
I watched a bunch of them. Then I had to get in my car and drive the other day. And then I kept watching them, which is really
while you were driving?
I'm like, probably not. Yeah, Missy's there. Because I'm still watching them.
Death caused by the videos. Yeah. Yeah. It was about 10 years ago when everybody I knew was being laid off. And the newspapers that were all making us critics do increasingly stupid and humiliating things like, you know, get on social media and blog and get on Facebook and do videos, and all the things that are natural to us now. But at the time, it seemed humiliating.
Yeah.
Yes. And so one day I imagined this, we would have start a video, it would be a 1 minute video to reach all those young people that they were always telling us we've got to reach because young people have no attention span apparently. So we just took the latest review in the paper and I ran around the house, my wife with the camera, and just videotaped it. And then I put it up on YouTube and wrote to some other critics and said, hey, look at what they're making me do now. You know, it was just an internal joke.
It's kind of like the producers, but it turned out it worked.
Yeah, that's right.
And somebody at the Post saw it and loved it, and they posted on the Post site, and they wanted more. And so now this thing, which began as a satire of the industry, is, you know, pretty much the only thing that that I do that gets any attention.
The production values are pretty high.
They are good. The costumes and the green screen stuff.
Yeah, it's a little Monty Python-ish.
Yeah, we want to just keep that flavor.
And I think of traditional book critics, some of whom must be turning in their graves.
Yes, exactly. Like me. Yes, I'm turning in my grave when I watch it.
And you're still alive.
Yeah.
And it's sending you to your grave early. James Fry? I just want to get a gut reaction.
That was a vicious one, wasn't it? That got a lot of attention.
And I watched it a couple of times. I thought, is he more offended by the content, the writing, or the fraud? And then, and I watched it a couple of times. I still couldn't.
It's a toss-up, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
The one about heaven, too, the five people you meet in heaven. That was also quite cruel.
Mitch Albom.
Yeah.
But it's mostly a satire of critics and of the pretensions of critics and criticism and all the things
we worry
about.
I don't think the author's watching those, and you know they watch them.
Not only that.
I don't think they see it as a satire of the industry or of critics. I just don't.
But now so many publicists pitch books to the videos, which is just so weird. I can't imagine.
That would be the hardest to do. What would be the hardest book to do a totally hip video book review on?
Well, like The Nickel Boys doesn't lend itself to comedy.
I want
to
read that.
That's very good.
Yeah, I love him.
Hardly any of the books I review lend themselves. They're too serious. They're too good. There's nothing mockable about them. There's no way to be funny in relation to a book about slavery or rape or those kinds of subjects that often appear in literary fiction. So it's a rare bad book that lends itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember one you got wrong? Over time, you just go, wow, I really...
It's usually on the upside, though. I look back and I think, gosh, you really overpraised that book, and it isn't anywhere near that good.
That's better than the reverse.
Yeah. Than the other way around.
Oh, that's great. Now, I have a question about this sort of spectrum of books that you review.
I
talked to Tom Shales once, who was the TV critic for the Post, about this, who would write reviews of TV shows that they were generally positive reviews of somewhat mediocre shows.
Except for Kathy Lee.
And I would say, well, I watched that show, Tom. It's not particularly good. He said, but you should see what's worse than that.
Wow.
And so do you encounter that you some sort of are kind to a book that, on a scale of 1 to 10, is a 6 because you've read a lot of ones and twos?
No, I don't think that. I'm continually amazed at how talented people are.
Oh, good.
Fiction writers in this country. Mm-hmm. I think it gets better and better. I don't know if it's the influence of the great writing schools or just publishers who are broadening the range of people they publish, but it's no problem to find great books.
Oh, that's good.
Have you loved any of the local authors that we love, like Angie Kim?
She's wonderful.
She's fabulous.
And a wonderful person, too.
Yes, she is.
Fabulous person.
You've had her on your show.
We did. She was great. Absolutely. It's a remarkable book.
Alice McDermott and I are sort of friends or at least acquaintances, so I can't review her anymore, but which is another problem. You know, you get to know these people and then they're off your list.
Yeah. You won't like us after the show. So.
Well, I can't review you.
Yeah, well, you might. What's the great American novel in you? Yeah. Have you got one?
Oh, no. The world does not need another mediocre novel.
What have you written, though, that when you go to your grave, somebody's going to find in a box in your basement?
It'll be the videos for sure. Unfortunately. Yeah, I know. The one about, there's a short one when Publishers Weekly decided that E.L. James was the publishing person of the year. Look that one up. It's very early, very crude. My daughter said she could only watch it while screaming with her eyes closed.
The hoopla surrounding her, you did I think it was an actual written review when she showed up at the bookstore in Bethesda.
Oh, gosh. I've never seen anything like that.
Talk about the scene that came with her, which never occurs with authors.
Oh, God. Not only did she have the publicist, but there were assistant publicists. And I think the publisher was there, too.
Yeah.
It was so many people, maybe 800, 1,000 people in that store. No. They had to shut off the escalators because so many people were crammed on them that there was nowhere to put people as they went up. It was bizarre. Yeah. And many, many people,
horrifying.
Maybe most people, had bondage jewelry and other tools on them.
Oh.
Men and women, yeah, little kids.
And the women talking about reading lines from the book to their husbands.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
I know.
Man.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. They were all very fun people. And they all seemed to know. They were all in on the joke, which also helped.
That was a big, very profitable joke.
Yes.
For E.L. James.
I think it was
very, very big.
400 million and counting. Jeez. Enough to give every employee of Penguin Random House $5,000.
Jesus.
No.
Yeah, they got a bonus that year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
God bless her.
But her last book, just a few weeks ago, maybe months ago, anyhow, this summer, just nothing. It just,
well, you run
yeah,
out
I don't
of
even
scenes,
remember it,
right?
Yeah.
It's really just, I don't even want to go there.
I mean, it was a bestseller, yeah. But it was not. Not hundreds of millions of copies.
Okay, what's the book we should all read that we haven't heard about?
Oh.
What's the book we haven't heard about that we should all read? We'll
catch
you out on this.
That's fair, because I only read ahead, you know, a week.
The Nickel Boys.
The Nickel Boys, is, yeah.
By Colson Whitehead.
I read your review of the second novel, the next novel.
Why should we read it?
Because it illuminates a chapter in our history that has been purposefully silenced and brings it back in a way that is really powerful and visceral.
Works for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love reading about stuff you don't know about. And it's how we all find out about each other.
And it was out in the open for years. And I don't remember the newspaper, I'm sorry, because they did great work. A newspaper down in Florida covered this for years in a really great way, too.
I think it was Tampa, maybe, but I'm not positive.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, great writing. I'm just so ADD. Great writing makes me think of this. If you've not read Jane Mayer's piece on Al Franken in the New Yorker.
Oh, it just came out, right?
Oh, really?
It's in pocket. I'm going to read it tonight.
Okay.
Everybody's been talking about it all day.
Freaking believable. Nobody writes like that anymore. Nobody researches like that anymore. Nobody checks facts and sources like that anymore.
We do.
It doesn't matter.
Yes.
The Post does.
The Post does.
We throw dozens of people with librarians at these big stories and work on them for months, sometimes years.
The opioid series has been unbelievable.
My favorite thing on the opioid story, so Rappahannock County, we have a little crazy weekend place, population 7,000. That story, you can go to the database and find out how many opioids were shipped to your county, to your town, to your neighborhood, whatever. And everybody in Rappahannock County is cracking up because there are only 7,000 people in the county. And, well, that had to be Doc so-and-so because we only have one doctor in the county, but you know, he left. Right. And everybody is identifying, zipping in on those stories. Yeah. That's a great series.
Yes.
Great series. But read Jane Mayer's. Okay, we're going to take
a
break.
I'm going to read it.
Yeah. And then we're going to come back with The Deserted Island, which is a recommendation by our friend Ed Butt. Great listener.
It's been very active on Twitter.
Very active. Yeah. We'll be back. We're good to go. We're back. We're back with Chatter on Books at an undisclosed location. Had a wonderful conversation with Ron Charles, book critic of The Washington Post. And star, really, your wife is as big a star as you are in those.
She's
hilarious, isn't she?
Will she come on this show sometime?
She'll come pick me up in a few minutes.
Oh, good. Okay. She can come
hide her in
and have a drink. So Deserted Island this week is brought to us by Ed Butt, who is in a room really remarkably smart, intimidating.
He's given us a lot of ideas.
He's given us a lot of ideas. I think we're going to do the freshman reading list thing maybe next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anticipation of September coming
Return to school, yep.
But he's making me feel even more inadequate than I already do. But he had this idea about what books do you have in your guest room? What books do you leave in your guest room? And I said, okay, well, first of all, it's a little presumptuous.
Exactly.
Because my guest room is, my kids went to college. I immediately redid their room to make sure they don't come back.
Exactly.
But Jeannie, you kind of have a guest room.
Well, it doesn't happen to have a bed in it right now.
Easels.
Right now, my guest room is sort of an annex of my art studio, but someday it will have a bed in it. Mm-hmm. And what I've had in my previous guest rooms is art books because I don't want someone to start reading War and Peace in one of my guest rooms and
never come out.
Stay.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Oh, good point. Short books are good.
Try a graphic novel.
art books, I think, if you have trouble sleeping, it's nice to flip through an art book, the works of Matisse or whoever you
That's a good one.
Like, because it doesn't engage you so much that it energizes you.
Right.
You can just kind of flip through and look and then hopefully doze
That's back, a lovely
back
idea.
Off again.
Like that.
David?
Guest room?
I know, right? Pull out sofa.
What are you talking about?
Pull out sofa in the den.
Oh my God, the closest thing we have a guest room is sort of like my wife's sort of office, which has men are from Mars and women are from Venus and books like that. And keep
walking. Those are good to leave for the couples visiting.
Please, let me leave this 5x5 room. Get me out of here. So that's the closest thing we have to a guest room. I don't know. We have a bookshelf in the living room.
And what would they see on the bookshelf?
All kinds of books. Different books. I mean, my wife does have much better taste than I do, so she has the good,
that's a
the
low really bar, good stuff, David. We love you, but that's
I
a
have
low dumb,
the
yeah.
dumb stuff.
Yeah, you might want to you know like, separate those. There's the smart side.
Exactly.
There's the dumb
side. She's got all the great now Jane Eyre and all those stuff. I don't,
Michael.
I just love the idea that we all have guest rooms, children, adult children rooms, art rooms. This is it's very revealing as to where we are. No, we actually have beautiful built-ins in what would be our guest room. And where my mother-in-law was this past week as she was helping
God
out with Henri. We never really fully moved into our house because it was right when we were pregnant and expecting Walker.
Yeah.
So I actually have, we have beautiful built-ins in our living room, which we've collected a couple books that have been important to us over the years. And I would take some of those upstairs. So I'm with Jeannie. I want something that might be a little bit lighthearted that you could pick up, but you could also put it back down, something you've probably seen before. So I think the first thing that I'd put up there is Lucky Jim, Kingsley Amis.
Okay.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
There's one auditorium scene where he just decides to go off. And if you can find that scene, it's a couple pages long. That's all you need to read.
Maybe you should put a little sticky in it for your guests.
Just a little dog
ear. Just go right here.
In terms of the visuals, I really like that idea.
That's a great idea.
A few other books that are on the bookshelf in the living room that I might bring upstairs, Official Preppy Handbook. Just because I think
really
funny.
It would be funny to read based on sort of my age. Lisa Birnbach did have the reprinting and reimagining of it with a newer one that takes some of those tropes and puts it into our setting. But the copy I have is actually the original when Dad was reviewing it, and it still has his annotations and all of his
wow.
And awesome. So I love going back to see what he was focusing on because his upbringing was so different than mine. Where I still have this preppy aesthetic of, you know, the hand-me-down blazer with the perfectly missing button. And
the worn elbows. Yeah.
Yeah, my bean boots are in the basement that are always, just carelessly unlaced. And I'd also bring in a couple of golf books because, again, this is something that you can pick it up. There's beautiful writing by Alistair McKenzie. It's called The Spirit of St. Andrews. Okay. And it is written 100 years ago, but we don't write that way anymore. It's this very personal style. You don't have to like golf to understand why you can fall in love with golf writing and just someone who totally understands the land, the culture around this sport. And it's more just about, you know, reading somebody's letters and someone's personal journaling than it is about the golf.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. Ron, what's in your guest bedroom?
Maybe 100 or 200 volumes of the Library of America.
Wow.
Yeah, they're nice. I've been collecting them since I was in college, I
Interesting.
Think. Yeah, they're nice.
My dad's reading, who's 97, is reading the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Wow.
But he's up to about Y.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. He's going to make it.
Bad news. No. Careful when he runs out. This is like the last leaf on the tree. And when the last leaf goes.
So Library of America, somebody could just pick up a random volume. And,
right.
Yeah.
They're all the novels. They're beautifully edited, lovely editions.
Nice.
It is nice.
Very nice.
I go there once in a while. Like Moby Dick, I last read
now,
in my collection.
Now, are those printed in like 6-point type?
No, it's good print, good paper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're nice. Mm-hmm. All hardbacks, of course. Mm-hmm.
I used to have in our repurposed child's room where guests stay, and we have a lot of guests. I used to have various books about Washington.
Oh,
some
that's perfect.
Some great
books.
Photo books. Yeah. Right. Chris Buckley wrote a wonderfully Washington Walked Here once. I can't remember the name of it. Chris Buckley writes great fun stuff. I used to have that. And now I have all the books from the show. 32 now.
That's great.
And you just kind of it's what's interesting is what people will pick up. So the last person in the world that you would expect to pick up a piece of fiction picks up Angie Kim's book, Miracle Creek, and goes, oh my God, that thing was amazing. And they take them with them. So I have all of those up there.
Are you dusting?
Yeah. No, I ask them. Yeah. I ask them.
Well, that makes sense.
I always ask them, or they walk out with them, and I go, what are you doing with my book under your arm? Exactly. So
what book?
Yeah. Exactly what book. So that's what I do. Yeah. But the most popular book I've ever had in any room on any coffee table was, we've talked about this once, The Last Supper. And I should know who put it together, but they got a bunch of chefs to put down on paper and in beautiful photographs what chefs always talk that's about when they get together, which is if you had only had one more meal to make. Mm. Jeannie, you would love this book.
I would have. I don't know about it.
The chefs describe the meal, and then there are these beautiful photographs. It is the most, it just creates such conversation. People start taking notes. I'm going to do
Nigella
that recipe.
Lawson in this book because I love her.
Probably. Yeah. I think so. Okay, that's it. We're done. Idea. Ron Charles, thank you so much for being with us.
This is such a pleasure.
Thanks, Ron. What's going to be the next Totally Hip Video book review?
I don't know. I've been waiting to find a good book for it. And
does it have to be a book you don't like?
No, no. I've done many positive. Yeah. I think they're mostly positive, actually.
Mm-hmm. You think so?
I do. I do think
so.
They are mostly positive.
James Fry have a...
Well, that's a
well, that's an exception. Yeah. But many authors have written to me and thanked me for doing it. And so several have said it was the highest point of their career. I can't give you any names because that's not true. But
my millennial children watched some of them and thought they were great.
Every time I watch one of them, I think, what does the New York Review of Books think of this? And it just makes me
they're
so
jealous.
Happy.
Yeah, they're not thinking about it believe
me. It makes me happy. Yeah.
They are jealous. Marcellus, thank you for taking care of us this evening, my friend.
For dealing with this insanity.
Michael, David, Jeannie, thank you for being here. Everybody, please download us, review us nicely. We have lovely reviews. Please we continue do. Those. Yeah. Those are really, really nice. Send in your book club therapy. We're still looking for that. Yes. Tori at chatteronbooks.com.
What's wrong with the group dynamic in your
what
book club?
What is hilarious? I get two or three a week in which people say, okay, you can't use this on air, but... Well, I'm not going to waste time helping you then.
And we're not going to name you. Yeah. Just
yes, we are.
Give us the...
Eventually.
No, we're not.
But
no,
if Robin, you give us a location, it's inside the Beltway, we might show up.
Just give us your problem. We'll sort
great
it out.
Great idea for remote. Show up at people's book clubs.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Sort of a Mike Wallace, like...
I have a Mike Wallace story, too. Okay, we're back next week on July 29th with a very special edition of Chatter on Books. We're going to be at East City Bookshop. Have you ever been?
Nice, yes.
Up on Capitol Hill.
Right.
And we're going to have David Epstein. Do you know David Epstein?
I know who he is. But
he really fascinating, interesting guy.
Okay. Had an op-ed piece yesterday, I think, in the Washington Post.
Author of Sports Gene and his latest book, Range, which is really, really interesting and very current, I think. And we're going to do it at the bookshop and do a little to promote local independent bookstores, which we love. So thank you, and we will talk to you next week. We're out.